Welcome to the Master Your Healthcare Career podcast, hosted by Dr. Anthony Stanowski. It can be hard to decide the next step to advance your career in healthcare. Join Dr. Anthony Stanowski, President and CEO, Commission on Accreditation of Healthcare Management Education, otherwise known as CAMHE, and longtime mentor in the field as he interviews guests about the challenges and successes that shaped them into the leaders they are today. Whether you want to continue your education, make a change in your career, or learn what it takes to lead, this is the podcast for you. What happens when a teacher's passion evolves into a healthcare leadership role? On today's episode, we welcome Quint Studer. Quint is a lifelong student and teacher of leadership. He's the author of many books, including his latest book, Rewiring Excellence. He serves on numerous healthcare boards, is a frequent speaker, workshop facilitator, and mentor to many individuals and organizations. Quint is a formal special education teacher. He recently co-founded Healthcare Plus Solutions Group. HPSG specializes in delivering precision leader development solutions to healthcare organizations across the continuum of care and their teams. This episode is a conversation about the influence of educators in shaping leaders. Quint offers insights into the profound impact of educators on his life and career, as well as highlights the significant role of teaching in healthcare leadership. Quint discusses the importance of a leader's role in investing and developing your team and faculty based on their individual talents. Now here's your host, Dr. Anthony Stanowski, and special guest, Quint Studer.
Melissa, thank you very much for that introduction and a warm welcome today to Quint Studer. Quint is a member of the CAMHE board. Quint, thank you very much for joining Master Your Healthcare Career.
Well, thank you. You know, I'm a big believer in CAMHE. I always tell people when they're thinking of going to a university to make sure they look at the accreditation, because I think that assures that they're getting, not that you can't in a non-CAMHE accredited university and college, but I think when you have a CAMHE accreditation, you can be assured that it's a high quality program.
Yeah, thank you, Quint. I think it's that level of surety that we kind of help employers understand when they hire students from an accredited program, they're more sure of success. But, you know, I want to talk about that a little bit because the focus of today's session is going to be maybe a little different than a lot of other podcasts that you've done. I want to focus on a part of your career that was very early in the journey. It was when you were a special education teacher, which again requires an accreditation and a certification to kind of teach in it. But what were some of the lessons you've learned, why you went into special ed, and what were some of the lessons you learned around that?
Well, I went to special ed really because of the impact of a teacher on me. You know, I'm hearing impaired, and it's not unusual for somebody that's hearing impaired to have a speech impediment, which I have, better than it used to be by far, and to be behind in academics because you miss verbiage, you miss what's being said. So it's not unusual for someone with a serious hearing impairment, which I have. I'm deaf on one side, hear a little bit on the other side, to end up 2 or 3 years behind in school. So that means you're always struggling. And I had a soccer coach named Coach King, and I had two study halls. And if you had two study halls, you could go out, get out of one study hall, and you could go do something else. And Coach King had me come to his classroom and sort of be what you would call a student assistant. And my job was to literally take the boys in special ed, because now we're in a regular high school, to the library, sit with them, and then take them back. And the reason they wanted somebody walking with them in the hallway, sadly, is to keep them from being teased or ridiculed or something like that. And I've always had great empathy for people that maybe have challenges. So when I went to college, I didn't grow up in a college background. I majored in undecided. I didn't know. So if anybody wants any advice on Western civilization, let me know. Because you take all these courses. And at the end of my sophomore year, I had 60 credits and you need 120 to graduate. And the Pearson University of Wisconsin-Whitewater said, you're now going to go where you could take credits that won't count toward a major because you've taken all the basics. You need to pick a major. You know, I was stymied because I didn't know a lot about college degrees and didn't grow up in a college degree community. So I started thinking about who's had huge impacts on me, and it came down to teachers. And so when I thought about the teachers that had a huge impact on me, Coach King came up. So I said, I want to be a teacher. They said, what do you want to teach? And I thought about I can't spell well. And what do you teach? The whole bit. And I said, I want to teach high school kids. And I don't know exactly how I described it, but they said, you want to be a special education teacher? And I said, yes. And they said, what do you want to teach in special ed? Well, high school, because Coach King taught high school. So I really had a role model of a fellow named Coach King. And I also found out something magic when I was in that classroom. I don't know if I helped the kids, but they helped me. Because I felt helping those children made me feel purpose, made me feel like I was doing something worthwhile, and made me feel I was making a difference. So, and I think that's what we do in healthcare every single day. It's a different world, but it's still making a difference and doing worthwhile work and serving with purpose.
You know, it's funny you mentioned the impact of your teachers and how that kind of meant so much to you. There was a quote on your website, Quint, and let me kind of repeat it. You said, in rewiring leadership development, the goal is to help each person optimize their own uniqueness to achieve the outcomes they want from their career in rewiring leadership development. And I thought that really is the definition of a teacher.
Well, and teachers of healthcare administration. I mean, you're having a huge impact because basically if you're, again, in a program for healthcare administration, you're obviously there because the good news is you're self-aware that you need to learn, which is number one, self-awareness. Number two, you're going to be able to share things in the classroom situation that you might be reluctant to share in an actual really work situation. Because there is that feeling of, I don't know, you know, I don't want to look silly or stupid. Plus, you're exposed because you're in with other people. So if you're in a classroom, you're going to be with people that work at different organizations, different parts of their career. So it's almost like getting best practices for nothing.
Quint, you know, what I want to talk to you about is not necessarily the role of the faculty in healthcare management education, teaching the students about what it means to be a healthcare leader, which is an important role. But you and I kind of talked a little while ago about the role of healthcare leaders. And one of the things that you said is that healthcare leaders need to learn how to be teachers. Healthcare leaders need to learn how to be teachers. Go through those kind of thoughts with our listeners today.
Well, I think as healthcare has become more sophisticated, we've had people that specialize in things. So I'm not sure, but you know, today, when I look at what's happening, you have all these new people in healthcare, you have all these new leaders in healthcare. And what we've really discovered in working with organizations is you can't delegate development. Larry Bossidy, who wrote the book called Execution, says there's two things you don't delegate. One is selection of talent. Two is development of talent. Now, it doesn't mean that you don't have other people providing these resources. So what I've learned that I think everybody in a leadership position needs to realize there are chief development officers. Now, it doesn't mean that the people you work for might not go to a course on training or selection. But when they come back, you've got to be the one that makes sure that you're supporting it and anchoring it and so on. And we've really learned that, Anthony, in working these last couple of years with CEOs, it's like a light bulb goes off. Because if you've got managers that aren't performing well, it's not, let's blame HR for not developing. It's not, let's blame OD, organizational development, for not developing. They can provide resources. The person that has to be in charge of developing the talent is the person that is supervising them. And I think that's a real shift. I think people have always said I'm involved in it. But if you go around and just ask every single leader, I tell CEOs, go around your executive team and just say, everybody that reports to you, what's the number one skill that you're working with them on developing right now? And tell me how you're helping them develop that skill. There's a bit of a gap. And I think that's what we're trying to bring back into healthcare real seriously is, how do you help develop these individuals that work for you? Because they need development.
And in your book, Rewiring Excellence, you talk about the N equals one in terms of that development, that it's not a mass development thing. Hey, everybody, go down to the auditorium and learn about what it takes. But it's really the leader working with each person individually and understanding where they need to develop.
Yeah, well, in my book, the reason I wrote the book is because what we've been doing isn't working all that well. And now if it is working, don't change it. That's what I say, you know. If it's working, don't change it. And I love the fact, you know, I'm going to be tomorrow in a big healthcare system for an LDI. And they'll have 800 people in this room from all over their whole system. And I love that. They're going to hear from the CEO. We're going to do some great table activities. But it's really, even though it's called Leadership Development Institute, I would like to say it's more like Leadership Awareness Institute. And it's all good. They're going to hear from the CEO and they're going to walk out with some more awareness. But where does the real learning occur? The learning occurs when they get back to their job and they sit with their boss and they talk about, okay, what's the outcome we're trying to achieve? So one of the things we're talking about at this session is retention of talent. Okay, so because we have a lot, you know, it's a big challenge. How do we retain talent? So when they come back, then not everyone, but leaders that have challenges with turnover should probably be talking about, okay, so what did I learn and how do I practice it and how do I put it into play and what are the barriers that you can help me remove so I can achieve what I want? So what it basically says is don't change the current development you're doing, but it might not be working if you have still have high turnover, if your employee engagement isn't looking good, if your length of stay is too high, because length of stay is correlated to turnover too, because you have too many new people in the organization who can have a longer length of stay. Is your patient experience, which hasn't moved since 2016 in most organizations. So if everything you're doing makes sense, but it's not enough, and when I mean N equals one, it means everybody's a unique individual. So Anthony's going to learn differently than Melissa's going to learn, different than Dana's going to learn. You're coming in at different experience levels. You're coming at different personality traits. You're coming in with different potential. So I need to sort of do almost like you do for a patient, a pathology. I need to look at an individual's pathology, their DNA in a way, and say, how do we maximize their learning potential? Which is what you do again when you teach. You maximize people's learning potential.
You know, Quinn, you made me think back. I was like you. I was a fifth grade teacher many, many years ago. There's an old saying that if a teacher, then by your students, you'll be taught. And I'm sure you're, you know, familiar with that. I think about that N equals one because what I learned during my several years as a teacher was to really start to look at the individuals and what they need, what was important to them in that class. One of the stories that I tell is there was this student who was a little bit of a troublesome student. And I noticed that when I would say to him, Joey, you know, you really aren't doing your work. You need to stay after school. I noticed that when I said that to him, he actually liked that. And so all of a sudden it became, Joey, if you get your work done, can you come back after school and stay with me? I want to talk about the Flyers game last night. Did you see it? And turn the whole relationship with the student. And I think also, I like to think kind of help turn some of his outcomes in the classes around as well, too. That N equals one is, you know, almost kind of a part of being a teacher.
Well, it is a teacher for in special education, for example, for every student, you have something called an individualized education plan. And it's taking that student and saying, as an individual, where are they at? What's the outcome we're looking for? How we're going to all coordinate so we help provide that outcome, how we're going to track it on a regular basis. So if you look at a lot of my work, when I talk about 90-day plans, I talk about something right now we're calling an OSAR, you know, what's the outcome, what's the skill, what's the action, what's the resources. It really comes to how we educationally individualize, you know, the development. So we need to do that in healthcare to individualize the leadership training. And I got a nice note from a CEO who read Rewiring Excellence, Michelle Fortune. And she said, you know, Quint, I can't wait to go back to the managers and start narrowing the scope of what I'm asking them to do to make it doable. And I know I'm going to actually see signs of joy in their faces when I go through this. Yeah. And I think as a teacher, you and I talked about this in the pre-call. There's certain things, of course, as a teacher, that when you're into healthcare, that you've got to learn that you didn't learn a teacher. I didn't worry about productivity in the classroom. I didn't worry about cash balance. I didn't worry about process improvement all that much. Days cash on hand, bond rating.
Let me argue with you there, because I know one of the things I had to do, candy sales. So okay. I had to make sure.
Right. But as a teacher, there's many things we do. As we set a lofty goal, because we want our children we're teaching to do the best we can, isn't that in healthcare what we do? We want our people we lead to be the best they can be. We set goals. We reward and recognize performance. We talk about consequences. So I think there's just many things as a teacher. And one of the mistakes I made, Anthony, when I got into healthcare, is I sort of thought I'd put that away. And it wasn't until I was at Holy Cross Hospital in Chicago that I realized that merely my job is to continue to take not everything, but many of the techniques I used in the classroom and bring them into healthcare. You know, the whole goal is to have the best middle management team. Whoever has the best middle management team wins. Well, these are people that probably don't have a master's, don't have a healthcare leadership degree, and because they're good at a certain tactic. But then our job is to help develop them in the leadership. And God, what a wonderful thing that we can do when we help people become better leaders, because it's a tough job. And we want them to go home not thinking what they didn't do. We want them to go home feeling joyful for what they did.
And Quint, you know, when you talk to your team, the Healthcare Plus Strategies Group and the Studer Community Institute and all the organizations, you really get the sense that each of them feel you care about them and you really want to develop them better. And they know that investment that they feel from you.
Here's a little technique we've learned recently, which is pretty cool. And I was sharing this with Terry Helen Bremer at TriHealth the other day. Sometimes in a big healthcare system, we give a deadline. Like, okay, everybody get this done in 2 weeks. But everybody's got a different job. So for example, if maybe I've got 3 direct reports, I can roll out the employee engagement survey in 2 weeks. But if I'm a med-surg, I always use med-surg because they usually have the biggest span of control. And I said, if you're a med-surg nurse manager and you've got people that might work 2 days a week, you got people that might have different schedules, you got 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, how long is it going to take you to roll this out? And they might say, well, it's going to take me 6 weeks. And, you know, I just did that with Rewiring Excellence. You know, even though our staff was reading it, knowing it, we wanted them to fill out a review of it. What did they like? What could it be better? And so the question was, well, when do you want this review back? And I said, why don't we ask each person? Because they got things going on in their lives. When do they think they can complete the review? Well, some people said a week. Some people said 2 weeks. Some people said 3 weeks. And, you know, normally they come in a game plan that's going to fit your need. And if there's an outlier, you say, can you make it a little quicker? We've never had that. So this is a small example. But when you ask people, when do you think you can complete this? You're listening. You're having empathy for their schedule. And they're very appreciative. And in healthcare, we just tend to give a, you know, get this done by this, not realizing everybody comes in with different loads, different spans of control. Maybe I'm going away for a week. So now if you tell me 2 weeks, you've split it down to 1 week. So I just think it's trying to have empathy. And again, I'm a huge believer that we can learn from precision medicine. Precision medicine looks at the individual, they create a treatment plan based on that individual's biomarkers, mutations, age, everything. And that's what we can do with leaders. And there's a sense of relief when you talk to leaders about individualizing it. But going back to what we've also talked about is what we're finding is certain leaders that have been promoted because they're subject matter experts, but they've never really had a lot of training and development on developing people, developing change. I was on the curriculum committee with Regina Hertzinger at Harvard, and we said the number one skill set a person needs is change management. So this last week, I was at Ohio Mental Health and Addiction Services because they're putting in Epic, and they wanted me to come in and help them get the change process right with Epic. They're not worried about the technology implementation. They're talking about how do we get the people to be compliant with what we're asking for. And I thought that was really neat on Lori and Marissa's part to think about the people component. And because what happens when we're in an organization is we plan the facility change, the technology change, and we just think the people will happen, and it doesn't.
Yeah. I think, you know, you've kind of hit on one of the secrets of management. You hear a lot of people go, I really don't like being a manager. It is tough. It's an understanding of who the people are and creating an empathy and then ensuring that, you know, we're all kind of working toward the same common goals of what we want to accomplish. And again, you know, how much is that really kind of taught in the curriculums?
I think the neat part is we're starting to see that, as you know, with Baylor, with Forrest, that re-looking at the people component. I have a new book coming out with Dr. Catherine Meese from the University of Alabama, Birmingham, called The Human Margin, Building the Foundation of Trust. Because if you look at the newest research, because of the pandemic, trust in the healthcare organization is really gone way, way down. So you've got to be able to look at how do you create tools and techniques to address the situation in healthcare. And so I think it's pretty cool that, you know, the book's called The Human Margin, because really, if we don't get the people right, we're not going to get the compliance right. If we don't get the compliance right, we're not going to get the rest of it right.
Just a little note about Catherine Meese. There's a little kind of thread going in there. We're putting out a new About Cami video, and the voice of the About Cami video will be Catherine Meese. And I just thought it was so appropriate. And the team, let me kind of not take the credit for it. One of the team members kind of suggested, Melissa Cross, and said, she really resonates with what I want to accomplish and where I am with my life. And we just felt it was a really fitting voiceover to kind of do for the About Cami. So it'll be something for you and our listeners to see in the next couple months, as we're still kind of nearing the ending stage of the development of it, but real happy about the work with Catherine.
We've had a great time working together on this book because, you know, it was an academia meets an operator. I think what happened is she did a great job with here's the research, and she had some solutions too. And then to me, my job was to say, okay, if people are not trusting the senior leadership team, what are some tools and techniques to build that trust back? So I think people really like the book because it's a different book. Because when I give a solution, somebody says, do you have any research for this? And when Catherine does the research, they say, do you have any solutions for that research? Well, we tried to bring them together in one book.
Well, I'm looking forward to reading that. And I also want to say to our listeners out there, I've read Rewiring Excellence, and I was someone who's got actually two copies of Hardwiring Excellence up on my bookshelf, one assigned, one from you, Quint. That was, to me, a breakthrough book. When it initially came out, it was a New York Times bestseller. It really was in the hands of a lot of hospital CEOs, but you really kind of taken a different look at it with Rewiring Excellence and what you learned over the past couple of decades.
Yeah, it's 20 years. And there's many things that are really good in the book. You know, you should still have the same pillars. You should still, of course, do purpose. All that stuff's there. But I did it because the results haven't been there. That's just based on results. So why aren't they there? So we spent 2 years in the field looking at why aren't the results there? And what we learned, we've got to take a fresh look at some things. And we sort of combined precision medicine, which is looking at individuals, with precision leadership. I think one of the neat chapters in there is rewiring well-being. Because we talk about well-being, but less than 3% of employees in healthcare ever access mental health. So we really talk about re-looking at that. All of a sudden, many of the physicians are now part of a W-2 employee or something, part of a system. How do we rewire how we engage physicians? There's some more biggest change items. And then there's some tweaks. Like instead of 5 questions to a patient, ask 1 question. Mm-hmm. And instead of filling out an iPad and a software tool, it's okay to have a note card, write on a note card and follow up later. Because you don't want your relationship building to look transactional. You want it to look like it is. What it is to get to know you better. And to make sure that you have what you need to do your job today.
It's funny, I think about performance reviews that you do with people. And across my career, I've had performance reviews where it was like 100 questions and I was rated on each of them by, you know, my manager, and we'd go through it and everything. And we've kind of changed it at Cami. We have 3 questions. Number 1, what have you done that's been really well and you're proud about? And number 2, where are there opportunities for you to improve? And number 3, how can I help you achieve your goals? And the employees kind of fill it out first, and then the manager makes comments about it. And then, but I really kind of feel like that sets the stage about where you, the employee, both need to go into the future. Been to me very effective.
Well, I think it's real effective. I try to tell people, and you know, we love to talk about evaluation. Why don't you call them development reviews? Yeah. And one of the things we found out through our work with the ANA and AONL and our recent studies on the Insight for Care Model studies with 3,100 nurses, 92% of people in nurse leadership say skill development is vital to them, and 80% of frontline employees, yet many of them don't feel they're getting it to where they would like. So really what I tell people, and I think this is great for your audience, is our message has to be to people, we want to invest in you. We want to invest in you. It's not an expense. It's an investment. And we want your skill development. I was asked, George Washington University, for a capstone course, sort of my thoughts on CEOs And I said, well, there's two words I listen to with the CEO when it comes to training and development. If they use the word where it's an investment, they're probably a dang good CEO. If they get caught up in training and development as an expense, they're probably not. Because you have to look at building your talent as an investment, not an expense.
Yeah, yeah. So let me talk about that investment in one second. And Quint, you've been very generous to Cami and to the future healthcare leaders. And one of the things that we're really proud of this year is the development of a scholarship, the Cami Quint Studer Scholarship for students in graduate healthcare management education programs. And it focuses on those students who have a passion for education. And what we're looking at there is a passion for developing others, not necessarily that these are folks who want to be a faculty member. It could be, but really what we're looking for are people who really want to help develop others. Talk a little bit about the genesis of the creation of that scholarship.
Well, one of the things that I notice about people is there are certain people that get really excited when they see people that they've touched actually sometimes perform better than they did or achieve goals that they didn't have. And there's also people that will develop someone and get threatened by if they get really, really good. And one of the things I notice is, you know, I own a couple minor league baseball teams. And what's really neat about minor league baseball teams is many of the managers maybe weren't successful at the major league level, but they played minor league baseball. Our manager, the Pensacola Blue Wahoos, Smoke Gaynor, is a great manager. I mean, great. He's won 200 games with the Blue Wahoos. Last year, they won the championship. And he gets talent and makes it so much better. Now, he never played in the major leagues. Yet when one of his players gets called up, he is so excited. So I'm looking for the type of person that gets joy out of helping other people be successful.
Yeah. Well, Quint, thank you for doing that. And we're looking forward, if there's folks listening out there, if you go to our website, cami.org, and under the awards area, we'll provide more detail on how you would apply for the scholarship. Quint, as always, this has been a fascinating phone call for me. You know, again, thank you for all you do. I don't think people really kind of understand the impact that you're making on the future leaders of healthcare and your commitment to higher education and what you're doing there. It's just phenomenal. So I appreciate all that you do.
Well, it's always been important to me, Anthony. And I think I know how teachers changed my life, where I went to college, also how they changed my life. So it's been a huge impact for me. And being part of CAMI, being part of AUPHA over the years, being part of all these organizations, I have unbelievable respect. And it's sort of cool. I ran into a new chief operating officer of West Florida Medical Center the other day, and he came up to me and he went to Virginia Commonwealth. And we talked about what a great program that is. And he said to me, you know, your books really is what made my career. And wow, is that ever a cool feeling? Now, he made his career, but it's nice to know that I've had a small impact and I want to continue to have it. And CAMI allows me to reach out to people that I have unbelievable great love and respect for.
Thank you. So let me leave a quote that you said, "The only legacy we leave behind is those we teach." So Quint, thank you. Thank you for being a phenomenal teacher, a great supporter of CAMI, and all that you do for us.
Thank you, Anthony.
Thank you for listening to the Master Your Healthcare Career Podcast, hosted by Dr. Anthony Stanowski, CAMI President and CEO. Subscribe, rate us, and leave a review. For more information, you can visit www.cami.org.